Anthony, thank you for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Happy to be here.
So I figured a good place to start would be with your favorite movie of all time, In Time. Why is that your favorite movie?
It's got a great life message that I think most people, you spend your entire life looking at the thing you have to do that day or that week, what's going wrong with your life, but you miss kind of the entire point, which is you only have so many days, hours, you know, minutes. And that movie takes great life lessons and it puts it into a super cheesy, stupid movie, which for those who haven't seen it, Justin Timberlake is the star. So already like not the movie that you would expect most people to think was a great movie. And they have a clocks in their forearm and literally they go to work. As they're leaving work, they like put their forearm underneath like a punch clock essentially, and more time is deposited into their clock and you get to live until you run out of time. And if you go to work, you keep getting more time. But the thing is that the people at the lowest end of the socioeconomic status or ladder, they only get 24 hours for every day that they work. So you literally, if you don't come back to work the next day, you're going to run out of time. You're going to die. Whereas the wealthy people have essentially unlimited time, right? They have thousands and thousands of days in their kind of forms. And there's a couple of things that are really interesting about that movie outside of just the message of, hey, time's important or time's your most valuable asset. But there's a scene where Justin Timberlake is able to move into kind of a higher status area. And when he gets out of the car, he runs into the building. And somebody basically like stops and goes, hey, man, what are you doing? And he's like, what are you talking about? And they're like, why are you running? And he's like, because doesn't everyone run? Because in the lower socioeconomic status, everyone's running constantly. And it's got this like metaphor for like they're on the rat race. They're on the hamster wheel. They can't get off. But when he moves to the higher socioeconomic status, in that community, running is looked down upon. Hmm. We have unlimited time. Why are you in a rush? Enjoy it. Walk. Slow down. Right. And so like there's all these little pieces of the movie. If you just watch it for like a cinematic experience, you're like, whatever, this shitty movie. But if you look at it from like the message it has, it's just really powerful through that lens.
When did you realize time was an important aspect of your own life?
2008. It was a weird thing where time actually isn't the thing that is valuable. I don't think most people realize time is valuable. I think there's something else that they realize. And then the kind of lesson of that conclusion is the time thing. So for me, in 2008, I was in Iraq. A gentleman was shot and killed, and it just hit me. I was 20 years old, and it was like, oh, shit, we all die. Like, unfortunately, that guy, it was today. But that's going to happen to all of us. And I think that you almost have this like reverse response where some people go to a very dark place. And fortunately, that wasn't me. But on the other hand, you can go down this path of like, holy shit, I'm lucky to and fortunate to constantly be able to wake up every day. Hmm. And so what you do is you start to like get more out of each day. And I joke all the time that like some of the happiest people I know and some of the saddest and like most depressed people I know all went to war. So it's very much like if you both went through the same experience, how does somebody come out depressed and somebody comes out super happy with like the rest of their life? It's all about like the mindset and perspective.
What other lessons did you learn that might not appear obvious or are unusual from your time in war?
Violence rules the world, like, which sounds, you know, kind of basic, but like we live cushy lives where we offload and outsource the defense of our country, of our cities, of our families, and even of ourselves to people who go do things that maybe we don't want to know so much about. And so that is like a very fortunate position for us to be in because most people, especially people who are listening to this, who have an hour of their day to listen to a podcast, like you got a cushy ass life. And so they don't have to worry about like, tonight I'm going to go home and I hope my neighbor doesn't try to come over and like rob me of the food in my home. Right. And so there are places in the world where like that is exactly what happens. And so violence definitely rules the world in certain areas. And I think we're fortunate not to have to deal with it on a day-to-day basis. The second thing is around like leadership. In the military, it's very hierarchical. So I'm a sergeant, you're a private, you do what I say because literally I have a rank on my chest. In the quote-unquote real world, that's not really how it works. Like, yes, there's hierarchical structures, but it's a lot more like influential leadership. And so what you begin to realize is like there's different ways to lead and different ways to kind of execute as a team. And so you have to understand not just how to be a leader, how to be what type of leader in what type of situation. And so you get into like the science of it and really unpack that. And then the last thing I would say is like you would be shocked at what your body and mind can go through and do when pushed to the limit. And a great example of this was actually in basic training. A decent runner, but not like, you know, there's guys who show up and they're running 6 minute miles and you're just like, I don't know how you do that. And one morning we got out into formation and they were like, okay, like group A, group B, group C. And I'm an idiot. I think at the time I was 17 years old and they were like group A. I was like, I'm fucking in group A. Like group A sounds like they're in the front. What I didn't know is group A was the fast group. And so they don't tell you how far you're going to run. You just go and everyone's running in basically a formation. So like there's no like falling out. Like basically if you're going to not keep up, you like kind of move off to the side and there's a truck going behind and you just get in the truck. And like in basic training, it's not like a SEAL training or special force or anything where you're like kicked out. It's more so just like, hey, you probably shouldn't run with group A. You get like demoted to group B or C. And I remember this one day we were running and it was the best I ever fucking ran in my life. Like I was dying. And we end up running and running and running and running. And like in the back of my head, I was just like, I can't be the dude who quits first. Right. Like, I recently had a conversation with Kosh Larson, Navy SEAL. And he was like, in Bud's, SEAL training, people quit in twos. So people turn to their buddy and like, y'all quit if you quit.
Wow.
But like, for whatever reason, I was like, I can't be the first one to fall back. And so we ran 5 miles and 6 minute miles and never done that in my life before. And we got to the other end and I was burnt. Like I was done. But I remember saying to myself, like, I don't think if you had told me, like, it was life or death this morning. I had to run, you know, 5 miles in 30 minutes. I don't think I could have done it.
Wow.
And so you realize very quickly, like, damn, we don't nearly push the limits of our bodies and minds. And it really helps. Like, the military does a great job of doing that because it's all in a group and you don't think about it.
Wow. That's really impactful. Now, when you are asked about this time, how much of you is a different person? Right? I think this happens a lot in podcasts where people will ask people about things in their past and they're actually not that person anymore.
Yeah.
So how much do you feel like the person who went to the Army and went overseas?
It's kind of like if you have like a software product, right? And then it has different like interfaces, like that's kind of how I think most humans are. You see it on social media, like the way you act on LinkedIn is different than the way you act on Twitter or Instagram or on email or whatever. I think your life generally is like that as well. And it's always weird when like somebody who's used to interacting with you at work then like sees you with your like high school friends. Like, dude, you guys are weird, right? Or they're like, I'm the same way, right? So like, I think through the journey of life, like we have that similar type of thing. The military experience was definitely like a certain box in time. But there was a lot of commonalities, right? Where I'm like super OCD about being on time. Like my wife will tell you, like if I'm late to something, I'm like not okay. And it's probably because it was ingrained in me, in the military, then playing football, right? Like all these things. And so now it's just like, that's just who I am. No point in trying to change it. No point in like being upset about it. It's just like, I have to be on time. If I'm not on time, I fucking freak out. And there's probably these aspects where that was born in a certain period of time or like honed. And then you carry it into the other interfaces or other periods of your life. So like, you're still the same person. It's just like you adapt to situations, right? And if you were to, again, go back to just like take somebody from a big company and then put them in a startup, like they will act very differently. They're adapting. Humans are adaptable, right? They're trying to figure out how do I operate inside of a smaller team, faster moving, less bureaucracy, whatever. And like that's actually like a huge advantage we have in the world.
One way you've adapted really interestingly is you've in the past year gone from hosting the best business show every day, a live stream, to now it seems like from the outside looking in, you're doing more interviews, more longer style content, and adding a layer of thoughtfulness. I think that's really interesting to see. How did you go about making that transition?
So Actually, the like live stream news show was the Divergence. That was the outlier. Mm. I've always, for years, been very interested in talking to people. And I felt like that was the way that I learned the most. I read lots of books. I listened to a lot of podcasts. I just talked to people. And since 2018, I've been talking to people on the podcast. It was always longer form. So kind of an hour or more, sometimes 2-3 hours. And it was just like whatever I wanted to ask, right? It was like very little prep. And I just talked and asked questions and was curious, and it was awesome. Going into 2021, this is like a common challenge, mistake, and opportunity that I think a lot of people get faced with. It was like, this works. Do I want to just keep doing the same thing, or do I want to try something else? And it's like an intellectual exercise of like, I'm interested in this. I see what other people are doing. Could I do it better? Mm. And so we came up with a whole plan, did it. And I think there was two main takeaways. One was just like, I don't really give a fuck about the news, right? I'm aware of it. I see it just like everyone else does, but like, I don't care about the day-to-day changes in various news stories, like all this stuff. It's just like not intellectually very stimulating for me. So over a 12-month period, we did it for 12 months, and I'd committed to myself, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it for 12 months. That became obvious to me. Like, hey, I don't really like enjoy the day-to-day stuff.
At what point did that become obvious to you?
Probably like 5-6 months into it. Gotcha. Because like part of it is like, there's like the honeymoon phase, right? Then there's the like, okay, we're like testing all these different things. And then like you start to realize like, hey, what is this? Why does it feel weird or whatever? And then you realize like, it has nothing to do with the show. It has nothing to do with the structure or the guests. Like, it's just like the news, mm-hmm. right? It was a very different conversation than having a conversation with somebody about like ideas or frameworks and things like that. So that was one. And the second thing is like the news, every single person who works at a news organization is screwed, mm-hmm. right? And I say that from like a loving standpoint, because I'm probably one of the only people who is a heavy, heavy critic of the mainstream media who's like, no, I've done it. Like I literally went and I did it in an independent manner, and I saw the incentives, and the incentives are to be crazier, say dumber shit, like have crazier headlines, like go for the clicks. That's where the fucking money is, right? That's where the views are. That's where the feedback from the audience is. Like, it's entertainment. And so I was just like, that's just not me, mm. right? And I felt like it got to the point where I like was becoming this character. And I was just like, dude, I don't fucking have to do this shit, right? and like, fortunately, I was in the position to be able to do that. But it was like, okay, if I'm not going to do this, what am I going to do? And I sat and I thought for a long time, and I was like, I enjoy doing what I've always done. Like, let's just go back to doing that. And by the way, like, when I say that I'm not going to do this thing we're doing right now more, there's going to be some people who love that idea. There's going to be some people who hate it. There's going to be people who don't understand. There's going to be people who say all kinds of wild, crazy shit, whatever. And I just was like, I literally don't care. I want to do what I want to do every single day. And like, I'm going to go build my life again in a way that is structured to do that. And that's what I did.
So talk to me about those 6 months where you have this realization that this isn't what you want to do, but you committed to something you don't want to do now.
Yeah. It wasn't that I didn't want to do it. It was just like on a stack rank order. Like I think a lot about when I was in my teenage years into my early 20s, you do a lot of shit you don't want to do, but you like know it's the things that you should do to get what you want. Mm. Right. So you're like, I don't know if I could think of, I did an internship when I was in college in New York City. I was living in Hoboken with a very lovely couple on Washington Avenue. They rented out like one of their bedrooms. I don't know what the fuck I was doing. I would like walk down, take the path into New York City. I was working at the New York Stock Exchange, but in the security division. I'd just come back from Iraq, and like somebody I knew somebody who knew.
Oh, wait, so not securities, no, security. No,
like the VIP security, like make sure that if somebody tries to ram a truck into the New York Stock Exchange, like we close the fucking doors and the police are able to kill them before they get in the building.
You were the head bouncer.
Right. I was the lowest on the totem pole, and my claim to fame was that they would stick me with all the people no one wanted to give a tour of the New York Stock Exchange to. They're like, hey, you as a killer, you go do that. And I loved it. I was like, oh my God, like who are you? Oh, amazing. And so like, I just like pepper them with questions, and I was probably like, the annoying fucking intern, right? So I was doing that, and then I would go because I was playing football in college all the way up to like, I don't know, 45th or 50th Street or something, like one of these like performance centers. And I would go and I would work out after work, and then I would come all the way back down, switch over to the path, and go back. And I just every single day for an entire summer. And every dollar that I made at this internship, which wasn't a lot, was basically going to pay this couple, let me live in a bedroom in their apartment, and then pay for this performance thing. And so it got to this point where I was like, who wants to do that? Nobody fucking wants to do that. But it was super important because I knew that it was going to, one, I was going to meet a lot of people, right? Which was valuable from a career standpoint. And then two, was like, I wanted to go back and continue playing football and do all this stuff. So like the performance stuff was, I had to do it. And so you look at that and you're like, the average person probably wouldn't have wanted to go do all that stuff, but the people who end up finding their way in life and accomplish some level of success, like they do that type of shit. Mm. That was my experience. But everyone has that thing of like, oh, I did this. It was okay, whatever. I learned something. Like maybe in hindsight, I'm thankful for it. But you just got to do shit you don't want to do in the beginning. You switch at some point and it becomes, okay, now it's not do the things I don't want to do. Now maybe I can do things that like, I'm cool with, and they're good for my career. They're good for whatever. But at some point you do transition over and you're like, I literally can do whatever I want. Mm. And not from like an arrogant standpoint, but it's like you develop a skill set. Like I recently was talking to somebody at dinner and I said to them, like, tell me a situation, any situation in the world. Tell me a country, tell me an industry, tell me whatever. I can tell you how you could build a business there. Now, doesn't mean it's going to be a great business. Doesn't mean that it's going to be something I would want to do. Doesn't even mean that I know exactly how to execute it and not fuck it up or whatever. But once you learn that skill set, like you can go implement this all the time. And so you start to understand it's like, okay, like I have choice. Mm. And so choice is like very powerful because I think it actually scares a lot of people. There's a lot of people who listen to this who they could do the same thing. They don't. They don't like taking risks. They don't feel confident in themselves. They don't whatever. And then there's the other element of like, if you do take the jump and you do it and all this stuff, like you just get fucking shot at verbally on the internet all day long, right? Like that's not fun. And so you have to have this like thick skin as well. And so like, you got to understand where you are in life. And there's people who are in their 50s and 60s that I look at and I'm like, whew, if I could ever get 1/100th of where they are, that would be amazing. And then they're probably looking at me like, if I could have, you know, did whatever when I was younger, like that'd have been amazing. It's just like, dude, everyone is fucking looking at everyone else. Like, what are you doing? Like, just like, we got it good. Like, everyone chill out.
Yeah. What do you say your core competency is, your core skill? You mentioned building businesses anywhere. But if that is the answer, then how did you go about building that?
No, it's just showing up. That's literally the only thing. That's the only thing that I do better than everybody else. I just show up every day, which sounds so dumb and like, I don't know, fucking elementary. But if you think about, take the podcast as an example. There's a lot of people who had podcasts in 2018.
Bro, you've done over 1,000 episodes. Like, I don't think people realize what this is actually like. Like, doing 1,000 of these.
Yeah, this is the third one I've done today.
I'm not surprised. It's incredible.
And I did all the other work, right? So like when you look at that, it's just why? It's because I actually enjoy it. You could not suffer through 1,000 and be like, oh, okay, I'll just do it, whatever, right? And so like I think the like showing up component is one piece of it. The second thing is I look at a lot of it like a game. So I ran one of the growth teams, a product manager for Facebook Pages, the growth team. And like that whole thing is like there's fucking numbers and you optimize them and like how many people click this, how many people sign up here, and like everything is just like a video game, but you're playing it with you know, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people who are clicking different buttons, all this stuff. Side note, a lot of bad shit can happen too, but another topic. And so if that's like exciting to you, then you like get on social media. Then you look at like, oh, like the finances of a business. Oh, like podcast downloads or whatever. Like you just see the game everywhere. And it's like, huh, I wonder how many people that walk by that sign, could we increase it by 20%? Well, one thing we could do is we could add noise to it. Like I bet you more people on the other side of the street would look over like, and you just like, you have a sickness. Like this is a fucking sickness. But like, I don't have a lot of hobbies. I don't do anything else. That's what I do all day long.
Yeah.
So you just enjoy it.
You mentioned working for Facebook and I learned recently that you worked closely with Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg. What were those meetings like and what were those people like?
Yeah, so let me caveat with like, I worked on a project. This is at the end of 2014. I was asked by some folks at Facebook. We had been working on the Facebook Pages growth. It had gone very well, surprisingly. In these situations, the product managers probably get too much credit when things go well and they get too much shit when things go wrong. But I was getting quite a bit of attention and praise for this having gone right. And so I was basically asked, like, hey, what you just did over here for all these small and medium-sized businesses, like, we want to come and we want to now do it for Mark and Cheryl. To their credit, they were like, we want to build bigger audiences on Facebook. They were like super based in hindsight and like very early to like go direct trend. So this whole idea of like, well, why do we need to talk to like reporters, or why do we need to go and do all these other things? Like, we have Facebook. Like, you know, Zuck at the time, I think, had 9 million people who were on his Facebook page. He was like, I created this website. Like, Tom from MySpace has more people on his fucking profile, right? Like I want to talk to the people. So in hindsight, like, super smart, very early. I mean, we're talking almost a decade ago, right? They were talking about this. They made one very important decision that I think they'll never get enough credit for, which was they said, we do not want to change the product to give ourselves an advantage. So there was plenty of ideas that got floated up by various people around the company. Everything from like, well, when people sign up for Facebook, just make them Mark's friend. Mm-hmm. That's what Tom from MySpace did. Like, he had a big audience, right? That feels weird. Then there was like an idea about like, well, why don't we like put up a huge interstitial one day? And it's like a letter from Mark. And there's people in the room like, hey, you know, in other countries, like, people do that on like the television, and like, they're usually not like super democratic, you know, leaders or whatever. Right. So like, one of the beauties of Facebook is you have people from all different walks of life, all these different experiences, and they're all trying to solve this problem. And what I learned from Mark and Cheryl, I'll give you one thing from each. Cheryl's leadership style was unlike anything I'd seen before. Like, we walked in a room, it was myself, her, and I think maybe two other people. And it was like hanging out with a friend. Like she was just like, okay, we gotta do this, like, what, you know, whatever. And like, meeting's over, and you're just like, I don't even feel like I'm at work right now. Like we're just hanging out. But she was very effective. And so in some way it was like disarming, but also effective, which I found enthralling. And also I was like, man, I've never seen somebody do that before. The military leadership schools that were like, do pushups, right? The Cheryl was like a very big difference. Mark, we were in a meeting. There was maybe, I don't know, 10, 12 people in there. And somebody was giving a presentation. It was like a fairly big product decision that we were trying to get his final decision on. And in the middle of the presentation, he stopped. He said, hey, wait a second, go back one slide. And he was like, the color of that button or something was like, the shade of blue is off. I was looking around like, are we getting punked right now? Like, this multi-billionaire who like is obviously incredibly intelligent is about to make a pretty, you know, big decision here. And he catches the shade of blue is not correct. And it was like, how do you go from 10,000 feet down to like literally 1 inch in the weeds and then back up to 10,000 feet? And the context switching, I was just blown away. So I asked somebody afterwards who had been at the company for, I don't know, 7, 8 years at that point. Probably, yeah, 6, 7 years. And he was like, you have to remember that Mark's been here longer than everyone else. He has more context. Mm-hmm. He remembers when they chose the shade of blue they chose, right? So guess who is the person most likely to know that the shade of blue is wrong? Mark. Yeah. And he cares about it, because if he lets it slide, then lets it slide again. Well, guess, like, maybe one day they get shipped on the website. And so it was just this weird thing of just like, how do you trust your team, but also be willing to make the big decisions, but also care about the details? Mm. And like, his ability and range was incredibly impressive to me. And so like, you see, okay, you have Cheryl and her pros and cons, you have Mark, his pros and cons. And then you just start to realize like, well, this is a people business. Mm. Like, they just had the best people in the world at the time. And they were incredibly effective.
So if that's a people business and you're running a people business.
Every business is a people business.
Yeah, of course. But in particular, communication, speaking to people on a day-to-day basis, and also leading people. Mm-hmm. How do you think about the best leadership style or the leadership styles you've seen and boiling it down to things that you want to take on and pass on?
Yeah, it really depends on the relationship between people. Like, there's situations where take a passive minority investor in a business. Like, you probably should not be giving tons of unsolicited advice and like, I think you guys should do this. Or like, you know, here's the thing that I know is going to work. You don't have the context. You're not in the meetings. You don't understand. You're not thinking about it as much as they are. Like, all these different things. You're probably better off just being more of like a thought provoker. Mm. Have you guys thought about X? Or have you guys talked to this other group that went through a similar thing? I can make an introduction for you. Like you're more of a facilitator and you're trying to help them explore as much as possible. But it's not about you. It's not, you're not involved there. Then there's other situations where like, you better make the decision. Because if you don't make the decision, the decision's not getting made. And you've got to live and die with the decision you make. And so like those two things are very extreme. And there's obviously everything in between. But when I think about certain types of businesses, those businesses desire or need certain types of leadership. So there's like remote work now, right? And all this remote work stuff is like awesome. Like the employees love it. But it takes a very specific type of leader to be effective in that environment. Then if you have 1500 employees, they're all in person in an office and like they're like all hands is Friday, I'm gonna be there with like my beer, right? Like answer my questions. And so I think that it goes back to this idea of like there's actually no single leadership style that I think is good or bad. It's about what is the situation, who are the people, what are you trying to accomplish, and then there's a leadership style that fits that. And it really just ends up being like the measurement of good leadership is not what the person does, says, or it's just like, do you get the job done? Mm. Right? And I think that is lost because we live in a world where like the leaders get celebratized, but it's like ultimately like either the job gets done or it doesn't. Mm. And I think like the military does a very good job of just like, dude, the goal is like accomplish the mission. Whatever the mission is, like that's the goal. Come hell or high water, doesn't matter what happens, like you've accomplished the mission. And part of what I actually think is interesting is we have now, 20 years, essentially 20 years of Iraq and Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And now you're starting to see all these stories come out. And people are realizing like, oh shit, you know, that Medal of Honor winner or, you know, 13 Strong or Lone Survivor or whatever. Like these usually are men who went through absolute hell, but they accomplished the mission, right? And what I think you're going to see is you're going to see a ton of these veterans. After, I think it was World War II, it was like 55% of all Fortune 500 CEOs were veterans, which is like a fascinating stat because now it's less than like 8%, right? But I don't think it's going to necessarily be the CEOs. I think what you're going to see is a bunch of these veterans are going to infiltrate all these different organizations, and they're going to bring some of that tempo with them. And if you go back, like what's the single most effective organization in the world? It's the military. Right. And so like that's true in the United States and elsewhere. And so I think you're going to start to see a lot of these like leadership tactics. I think you're going to see a lot of the day to day things that people learn start to infiltrate into organizations. But the one thing that is the threat to it is are people willing to work? Mm. Like we're pretty soft as a country now, like very soft.
So on that point, what can people do to if they don't have a military background to get some of the advantages that being in the military gives?
Ultimately, the military only teaches you really like three things, right? It's like shoot, move, and communicate, which is if you think of teamwork, like that's all that is, right? It's like how do you and other people go and do something together and not kill each other, not get hurt, and accomplish the mission? It's teamwork, right? Like that's like a pretty basic fucking thing. They have all kinds of cool names. They have literally books that are written that are super long, but it's like they teach you teamwork. Second is leadership. So there's somebody who's in charge of that. And there's somebody who's in charge of that person, who's in charge of that person. Like there's a whole hierarchical structure. So it's like teamwork, leadership. And then the third thing is just like a mental toughness thing. Mm. And I actually think in reverse order, it's easier to learn the mental toughness than it is the teamwork, because the mental toughness thing is reliant on you. You don't need other people to learn it. The leadership thing, you can actually become a better leader even if other people aren't around. You can read books, you can talk to people who are leaders, you can listen to podcasts. Like there's a way to kind of sharpen your mind a little bit or your tactics. The teamwork is where you are reliant on a ton of other people. And teamwork is this weird thing where you only get good teamwork one of two ways. Either there's like a special moment in time where some people come together, they're rallied around a single mission, and like it just works. And like there's some like fortunate, you know, kind of alignment there. Or two is it's forged by things like the military where you just get beat it into people's fucking head. Mm. Like there's a reason why I always use the example in basic training. When you carry the cups in the chow hall, you carry it with your elbows up at a 90 degree angle to the cup. Like I look like a fucking idiot, right? Like why are we all walking around? Like literally, it's almost like you're walking around looking like a duck or something, right? You're like, why are we doing this? And like, I don't know, 6-8 weeks into it, all of a sudden you go to the grenade range. And guess what? That's the same position that you hold a grenade to pull the pin.
Wow.
And so they've literally ingrained it into you for weeks and weeks, three times a day, every day for weeks to hold that position. And now all of a sudden it's like second nature.
Wow.
And so you realize like, yeah, there's a bunch of dumb shit, but also there's like some intentionality to it. And why is it important to pull it that way? Well, like, damn, wouldn't it be bad if you were standing next to somebody and you pulled the pin and fucking couldn't throw it, and now you're holding it?
Yeah.
Now you just put your friend in danger, right? So, like, there's all these little things like that, which you can't recreate. Like, I don't think that we should try to recreate it all. It's just like, hey, it is what it is.
One thing that I take from that is that there's no wasted moments, mm-hmm. right? And it's something that when I was studying you in preparation for this, I noticed—
That scares the shit out of me. What? It's studying me.
Yeah, well, I listened to about 10 podcasts to do research for this, and I'm noticing the common theme of you not wasting moments. I was listening to you and David Perel today mm-hmm. talk about how you, in, I believe, 2020, how you described it was you would take an hour and you'd be like, okay, what can this hour be dedicated to? Mm-hmm. And that's like no wasted moments. Like, all right, next hour, what can that hour be dedicated mm-hmm. to in terms of content? How have you used that to create content, that idea of no wasted moments?
So just on the topic in general, again, I got a sickness. I can't be bored. Like, literally, if you were to talk to my wife, like, if we're sitting there and I'm sitting for like 2-3 minutes, I'm like, all right, I gotta like, okay, there's an interview I could watch. I'll read this book. I'll like do something, like, whatever. And it's not always like high production, right? Right. There's times where I fucking doom scroll or whatever. That is not healthy by any means. But it is enjoyable for me in some weird way. And so I think that that ends up being something to capitalize on, right? Is like we have the opportunity to get so much more information, and I really enjoy doing that. In terms of the content, I would say that there's two like aspects to it. The first is when 2020 happened, there's a lot of people like, oh shit, like I can't do interviews in person, whatever. I'm like, yo, I know they're not busy. They ain't got shit going on right now. No one got shit going on. I just started emailing everybody. Wow. And I was like, let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. And like, you could see it in the responses, like people who would like not answer before or who would be like, oh, I'm busy. Like, let's maybe do it at the beginning of next year or whatever. They were like, okay. And they were doing it in their kitchens, in their living rooms. They were doing it off their fucking phones. Like, it didn't matter. And so I was just like, oh, guess what? Not only are the guests not doing anything, the audience isn't doing anything either. They're locked at home as well. They're not doing fucking work, right? They're watching YouTube. They're listening to things, whatever. And so I was just like, there's a moment in time, hit the gas. And I think a lot about, I didn't know this at the time, but in hindsight, I've had friends through discussion highlight the fact of like, sometimes you got to know like, hey, we're going speed limit. Yeah. And then there's sometimes where you're like, dude, you just got to hit the hole, man. Like just fucking slam on the gas and you got 2 months, go. And you got to learn. It's an acquired skill of knowing when to go and when to kind of just, okay, we're doing well. But that was one of those moments where it was just go. And I recorded a couple of podcasts that exploded, right? And Chamath was the big one. And it was the first time I had recorded a conversation that did 1 million views on YouTube. And I remember recording conversation. I walked away and I was just like, I didn't even think about the audience. I was like, holy shit. I just got like a fucking masterclass in what is happening. That was cool. And like, if I hadn't been so OCD about like actually publishing it, I might've forgot to publish it. Like it was just like such a valuable conversation. In hindsight, like that's why it was so popular, was because it was so valuable to me. So the audience found it valuable. And so then it became a game of like, all right, well, if we record for an hour, how many pieces of content can we get out of it? And like now we're like elite level compared to how we used to be. But it's like, okay, if I record a conversation, I get an audio podcast, I get a YouTube video, I can probably get some YouTube clips. Now I can get shorts, reels, TikToks, like all this stuff. Then I could actually take it and I could write a whole email out of it and I could send that, right? And you start to like play this game, you're like, oh, I can get like 10 or 12 pieces of content out of this. That was really only an hour, hour and a half of my time, you know, back then. And so when you start to learn that game, you just realize that like, just do it. Mm-hmm. You do it, put it all out there. And then the audience tells you what works and what doesn't work. And so many people, I think, they get discouraged early on. But like our podcast, literally, I went back and looked a couple months ago. Guess how many downloads we got in the first like 6 months? We're getting like 250 a day, 300, you know, on a per episode or whatever. Like, we should have stopped. Like, we were insane to keep going. But it was just like, I didn't even know how to check the analytics, right? Like, literally, somebody else was doing that. I didn't even know how to do that. So I was just like, oh, I had a great conversation. Somebody else said they'll come in. Okay, do that. Like, keep going. And then when I started like, oh, there's download numbers and like all this stuff. And I was like, all right, well, how do people grow a podcast, right? Okay, how do they do that? Like, and you start to play the game. And the next thing you know, you're like, this is just
work. Like, just do the work and it will grow. And that's what happened.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about it like that. When you spoke to Patrick O'Shaughnessy on Invest Like the Best, you said four things to look for in founders were persistence, empathy, communication, and salesmanship. That was in 2018, and I'm curious if you would still agree with that.
What'd
assessment.
I say? Persistence, what?
Persistence, empathy.
Yeah.
Communication, and yeah. Salesmanship.
Yeah, I generally still agree with that. I probably would like change up the way I described them, but like basically don't quit, right? I won't say names, obviously, but we've had a number of companies that we were really excited about were doing well, or even companies that weren't doing well, and like people just quit. Like, you can, hey, this didn't work, this whatever, like, you just quit, right? Still had money in the bank, still, like, could have kept going. And it's, some people were, like, honest. They're like, hey, I'm burnt out. Like, this just isn't for me. Other people were like, ah, you know. And then you're just like, where did that person go?
How do you take that as somebody whose core competency is not stopping?
You can't change other people, right? Like, it's kind of like advice. Like, everyone wants to give people advice. And what you realize is the only people who are going to follow any advice are the people who show up and they're like, hey, I want to do this. Like, what should I do?
Yeah.
Right. And we can talk to a bunch of examples of that. So I would say persistence is like definitely the thing. It's probably the most important thing outside of idea, market, and like who's actually on the team. Mm. It's just like, are these people going to quit or not? Cause this shit's hard. It's super long. It can be very, very lonely. And there's an ego element to it of like, what's the joke? Everyone who says they're a startup founder is just unemployed, right? Of you know, especially when they're starting out, they're like, yeah, me and my friend, we are working in a closet and we have a company. And you're like, yes. But at some point, like they look around the room and they're like, are we just two weirdos in a closet? Or like, do we actually have a company? Right. And like, that's healthy actually, right? That's not a bad thing. And it's part of figuring out, hey, what is the product we're building? So I think persistence is really big. The salesmanship and like, communication skills, I would actually put those in the same bucket. It's just like, can you raise money? Can you hire people? Can you sell? That's the same skill set, right? Can you tell stories? Can you get people excited to want to do things and like join you on this journey? If you can't raise money, you're never going to be able to recruit people. You're never going to be able to sell, mm-hmm. right? If you can't sell very well, you're probably going to struggle with the other two. So it's this ability to like, can you basically just bend the world to do shit that you need? Mm-hmm. Which you can call it salesmanship, you can call it communication skills, you can call it whatever you want, but just like, how do you do that? And there's not like a formula. It's not like, okay, here, fill out these three questions and I'll know, can you do that or not? I think you have to see people in action. And some of it is like you talking to them, but some of it's also how they interact with their people. What have they done previously? Like there's all these little tells that I think you can get at that. And then probably something I've changed my mind on is like the idea actually really fucking matters and the market really matters. And so those are less about like the founder as much as like, is this founder a good decision maker? And the decision making that you can tell immediately is just, what idea are they choosing to pursue? Like they're going to invest their most valuable asset, which is their time. What are they going to spend time on? And then two is how big is the market? And good founders won't go after horrible markets because they either, if it appears to be a small market, they have some belief that it's going to be bigger in the future, it's going to change, or they can, you know, do something that will expand the market. Or two is somebody who you think is a good founder but picked a really bad market. Usually what ends up happening is it doesn't work out. No matter how good you think the founder is, I think it's Andreessen has a saying, bad team meets good market, market wins. Good team meets bad market, market wins. Mm. And so kind of the first test of like, are you a good decision maker or not? Is like, what idea do you choose to work on and how big is the market you're going after? And that tells you a lot about, can this person continuously make good decisions or not?
And how do you think about if you're investing in companies, how important is the person's social media or having an audience online when investing in companies?
Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if you're in a business where that is an advantage, great. But I don't know, take all the millionaires in America. Like how many of them have big social media followings? Like 0.1% of them. Right. Yeah. And sure, social media wasn't invented when many of them got rich and like, oh, whatever. But like to be a good real estate investor, you don't need to be on fucking Twitter. Right. Now it can help if you want to raise money on Twitter, if you want to meet other people, like there's advantages to it. But this idea that like you have to have a big audience, I think is like completely ridiculous. I also think that, it can actually hurt right? So there's the joke that like there's an inverse relationship between the amount of tweets and the work that gets done. And like I've seen it in my life. Like when I'm tweeting less, it means I'm getting more shit done, right? Well, if I'm sitting on Twitter all day long, like I'm not getting shit done.
You have 66,000 tweets, I believe.
Yeah, there's a lot of fucking wasted time, right? Most of those are replies. I'm just replying to people. I don't know. But like if you think, Jesus Christ, 66,000?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
But you actually—
I am such a fucking loser.
No, but you built something amazing. And
yeah, it's valuable to an extent, but like there is a diminishing return as well, right? So like what's the difference between a million followers, 1.6 and 2 million? Like it probably doesn't fucking matter. You know, if you have like a stupid brain like me and you're like, oh my God, how do I like move the number? Right? Yeah, but at some point you're just like, I don't care anymore. And like now people probably notice I tweet way less. Some of it's like, it's just tiring to deal with all the trolls and people just being stupid on the internet. Two is like, I've replaced a lot of the tweeting with like, I'm actually really active in like some private group chats and stuff where I get a ton of value out of. So like, that's just like a zero sum. Hey, 1 minute on Twitter is now 1 minute in like a private group chat. And then another thing is just like, I kind of feel like I got most of the value out of, from like no audience to having an audience. You know, what's the point?
Yeah. Well, your big talking point recently is like, get off the internet and spend some time in real life. I've noticed that.
It's bear markers are very good at like clearing your brain, right?
When you see the number go down.
Yeah. Well, it ends up being this weird thing where the people who look at numbers going up tend to also be the people who look at the numbers going down, right? And I think I'm unique in that, like, I fucking love more than anyone else when that number goes up, right? You're like, this is awesome. Like nothing is more fun than winning, right? Like all this stuff. And that's just human nature. Like I don't care how gentlemanly you want to present yourself or whatever. Like if somebody texts you and they're like, yo, the stock you own, the bond, the real estate, whatever, went up a lot. You go to your computer and you look and you're like, wow, that was cool, right? But some portion of people also go and they're obsessed when it goes down, right? I'm not like that, fortunately. So like I'm super calm in like bear market stuff. Like I just don't care enough because I'm not going to do anything. No matter, Bitcoin could go to $1,000. Other assets I own could literally go to pennies. I'm not going to do anything different. So like, why do I look, right? I just don't waste the time. But the second thing is I had a scare. Fortunately it was a stupid scare, but it was a scare in that, 5 or 6 months now, ago, I went to read a physical book. Somebody gave me a book and I was like, oh, look at this antique here, this physical thing. And I sat down and tried to read it and I couldn't read. Wow. And I was like, what is going on? My head hurt. My eyes hurt. I couldn't concentrate. I like could not read the book. I could read the words. Like I did not lose the ability to read, but like, I literally could not concentrate, read. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? So I started at Google and there was a couple of things that were interesting. One, it was just like everyone's addicted to the internet and our phones and like that reinforcing, like, God, I feel so stupid. Like, yes, that's probably true. The second thing was there's some scientific studies that are coming out that like because we look at screens all day, our phones or our computers, they stay pretty much within like 3 or 4 feet of our faces. We never look with depth. And so like it actually messes with your eyes. So then I was like, well, how do I go outside? Like, where is the farthest thing that I can look at? Right. Like you sort of like, oh shit, this is bad. And so I just said to myself, I was like, I am going to read physical books. And like, it sucked. I feel like such a loser for saying like, oh, reading physical books was hard, but like my head hurt, my eyes hurt. Like it was hard. So I've said to some friends like, hey, go get a physical book. Try to sit down and read for an hour. Most of you listening to this cannot do that. Wow. And you're just like, that's a crazy thing. Now, I love audiobooks. You can speed it up, all the stuff. Kindle's great, whatever. But I said to myself, I'm going to read the physical books because like I want to prove to myself I can do it. And so the beauty of a physical book is it is not a screen. You cannot be on the internet and read the book at the same time. Now, if you're really bad and undisciplined, you can like read the book and every page turn and look at your phone, which I definitely have done before. But like it does pull you off. And then what you realize is like, dude, if you read Twitter, I think I tweeted one time, like if you read Twitter every day, you'd think the world is ending.
Yeah.
Like literally the world is going to blow up. We're all going to die. And like, you know, the evil people are going to take over. And it's like, sure. Like some of that shit may happen or may not. But there is this like calming effect of like, just get off the internet. And what I found is that like the first time you try to do it, even for like, I don't know, an afternoon, it's hard.
Yeah.
Like another test is read a physical book for an hour. Another one is can you at noon put your phone down and leave and come back at dinner? No watch, no phone, no anything. You will literally be like we're addicted to this shit, right? It's like, oh my God, where's the notification? What's going on? Like you just freak out. And so you have to like wean yourself off, which sounds crazy. But like we are addicted, and so you have to treat it like an addiction. By the way, that doesn't mean that I don't spend an hour on Twitter, right, and still doom scroll. It just means that I have the ability to not go on Twitter if I don't want to. And like there's some like victory in that. I don't know. It's like a weird thing that I'm just like slowly working through that. I'm enjoying reading the physical books, but it's way slower. I read for like 2 hours at night, and I'm literally like, holy shit, I only read 50 pages, you know, or whatever. I'm like, I literally am the slowest reader in the world. The audiobook would be done by now.
Well, your wife recently came out with a new book released the pre-order, which I ordered right away and I was super excited about. And what's that like when your significant other is writing a book and you get to witness that process?
Yeah. I know every word in the book. She read me every single page. Sometimes didn't matter how tired I was or whatever. She was like, sit down and listen.
No wonder why you started reading.
Yeah. Well, it was very cool because I think, I knew Polina always wanted to write a book. When our daughter was born, it was kind of this moment of like, when else are you going to do it? Right. And I think from the outside, people are like, what do you mean? Like you have a newborn baby, you're still running your business and you're going to write this book or whatever. And she was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And like, to her credit, like people are like, oh, Pom probably like, you know, took the baby every day or whatever. Like, no, like we very much, like we enjoy hanging out with our daughter and spending time and stuff. There was like maybe two or three times where I was like, hey, I know you've got to like finish for a deadline or something like that. Like I'll go hang out with the baby by myself, which the like, first couple times, like scary as shit. Cause you're like so scared you're going to do something wrong. Other than that, like it was very much as she calls it, like edges of time, baby's asleep, we're both working or whatever. And so it was awesome to like see it come together. And then like when she would read it to me, I like, she'll kill me for saying this. I really didn't want to like it.
You didn't.
I mean, I'm joking, right? But yeah. I wanted to kind of be like, yeah, it's okay, you know, whatever. Like kind of give her a little bit of shit. But I remember every time she read me, I'm like, damn, this is a good book, right? Like this is something that I would enjoy reading if I didn't know who you were. And it was like chapter after chapter after chapter. And I was like, are you about to write like a fucking amazing book? And when it was all said and done, I was like, you know, again, you never know with the internet. Like sometimes things, they fucking take off. Sometimes they don't. Like the internet is this weird thing. But I think it's a book that she's proud of. Mm. And also I think it's a book that like when I read it, I learn something, which I believe will be other people will learn something. And then when you look at it, it's also got the ability to like teach you a high level idea, but it's also very specific, right? So it's like, here's this idea, by the way, example, which the books that I don't enjoy, they're just super high level. They don't have the specificity to them. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes, but I'm very proud of her. And she did something I couldn't have done, which like is even cooler because I think people are like, oh, he like works really hard, like all this stuff and everything. I'm like, dude, y'all thank me. Like this is fucking crazy what she just did. So it's cool to see people are excited about it.
And then what's going on with you guys both putting out content and how has that shaped you? I mean, personally, my parents they work together every day and they it's interesting because people say like, how could you do that? How could you work so closely with your significant other? And it seems like you guys see each other all the time and see each other online all the time. So you're doing the modern day version of working together.
See each other on the internet. a great test would be like, do we text or Twitter DM each other more often? Right. Like, I don't know. It's just very enjoyable. Like, I have this theory in relationships that last. There's only two ways that a relationship can last. You meet relatively young, and as you kind of go through those different periods of your life, you both evolve and change together. And it's either because, there's like true love, whatever people wrap their heads around that. There is some defined like mission, like, hey, we both really care about X. And so as we both evolve as people are single, then dating, then married, with kids, like whatever that mission, like keeps us united or whatever. But there's like very much meet early and continue. The second thing is like, you've been out on your own and you have the ability to like, okay, I kind of like am comfortable with myself. And then you meet somebody and you're like, oh, we get along really well. And it's more of like, this person's like your best friend to some mm-hmm. degree. And therefore like it works. What's crazy is society actually focuses on like this middle ground, which is like, oh, don't get married at 18 or 20. Don't have kids then. Like wait till you're 23, right? And like I grew up in North Carolina. There's a lot of people getting married, 23, 24, 25, 26 years old. And I would have been a complete shithead if I got married then, right? And like Flynn and I have talked about it. Like if you met, I don't know, maybe post 25 years old, your significant other, and you both sat down, ask yourselves, like, would you have liked me in high school, right? And like, I don't think Flynn and I, like we joke all the time, like, I don't know, like 50-50?
Yeah.
And so it's actually better that like we met when we did. And it's this crazy thing where like, there is no difference between work and life. And like, it's just like, we get to do what we want to do every day, which is awesome. But like, guess what the conversation at dinner is? I read this thing. I saw this thing. Did you watch this? Oh, I listened to this thing. Like, what did you think about this idea? Do you agree? Do you not agree? Whatever. It's like a cheat code. Like how many people get to do that? Not that many. So it's cool.
Yeah. One thing you guys have talked about is that the two things that make for good conversations is something you've spoken about. And it's people who don't do small talk and people who ask a lot of questions.
You want me to put one of my friends on, expose one of my friends? So Mateo, the CEO of 8 Sleep, he's going to kill me. He doesn't chit chat. He doesn't have a chit chat bone in his body. So we joke with him all the time and say he's Mr. Chit Chat. Because if he says hello, he's like, oh, he's chit chat. But like one of my best friends, we talk all the time and it's just like, hey, and like, that's just what we enjoy doing. We're super efficient. We enjoy talking about all these different things. And so like, you know it when you see it, like there's dinners that you'll go to and people spend time talking about other people or like, just like bullshit. And you like leave and you're just like, that was fun. But like, I didn't really learn anything. I don't think I contributed value and I don't think I got value out of the conversation more so than it was like entertaining.
The equivalent of watching the news.
Watching the news or just like doom scrolling or what, like whatever it is, right? It's like, I did spend the time there. I was present, but like, that was weird. Then when there's the like, no bullshit, no chit chat, whatever. I joke that like when me, Polina, Mateo and Alex go to dinner, we should have an agenda, like literally, like it's at that point now, and we're just mow through shit. But like, I'm like on Thursday night, like, yo, Saturday night, I gotta go to dinner with my friends, and like we're gonna hang, right? Yeah. And I'm like looking forward to it because it's fun, but it's this type of thing where like I'm like, I don't care if we're here for 5 hours, like, I don't want to leave because it's intellectually stimulating, it's learning, it's fun, it's like all these different things. And when you find groups of people who all like similar things and are willing to like be honest with each other. That's the other thing is like in the superficial conversations, everyone just says what they think people want to hear. But like, if you're like actually honest with people, like you may be like, I like X. And another person's like, you're dumb. I like Y. And if you can like have that conversation, not be offended, like you're way ahead of everyone else because superficial conversations, like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I like X and Y. You know, it's nice. Right? Okay. Do you want to order? Okay. No, you order. No, I'll order. Like, it's just like, okay, Mateo, you're ordering this, like go. And it's way better that way.
How do you find friends like that?
You just, you have to hire and fire friends, right? Like, there's a group of people that I would say Plin and I will always be friends with regardless. I'm very fortunate. I've got a large family, my brothers and parents and everything. And so like you, there's certain things that like, no matter what you do in life, what your interests are, how you evolve, whatever, like they're good. They're in the circle. Right. But then there's also friends who like, I've been fired by friends who they're like, hey man, I don't really give a shit about any of this stuff. Like I want to go spend my time doing this. I know you don't like it. So like, don't worry. Like, it's not like I won't be offended, but like, I'm going to go do this. Awesome. And then like, next thing you know, like 2 years later, you're like, I haven't talked to that person in 6 months. Right. And okay. Like that's fine. Right. Because they're happy and I'm happy. But also like, you kind of know, like you just like see someone out in the world and you're like, I bet you that person would be, they could be in the club and like you go to dinner, or get lunch or meet or talk or whatever. And you're like, okay, that was cool. Like whatever. And it's like little, you end up like hiring a friend. Mm. And I think people hate that because it's like so clinical. Right now, I'm not like, hey, here's a job offer. Like, do you want to be my friend? But to a degree, it is very much like, no, what do you do at a business? Like the people who are productive, they end up getting more responsibility. They take on more things. Like they stay around, like all this stuff. The people who are not productive or are anti-productive, like they don't last very long. Why not treat your conversations, right? Again, it's like you're investing time. Mm. What's the return you're getting for your time invested? By the way, you can literally go to dinner and be like, I get no professional value out of this, anything. It's just like, I enjoy going to dinner because this person's hilarious and they make me laugh. Perfect. Right? So it's not a judgment on like everything has to be like work or business or whatever. But like that dinner is my hobby.
Mm.
Right? Most people are like, oh, I have this hobby. I go and I do X, Y, Z. And I'm like, no, like I go to fucking intellectual war with people and I love it. And so do they. And like, we're losers, but we enjoy doing it. I don't know.
Definitely not losers. And there's a quote that sticks out, which is the master in the art of living draws little distinction between his work and his play.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something I feel like you live so, so truthfully.
Yeah. Well, I believe that most people that I talk to and I'm like, oh, that person's happy, which is like a weird concept. They just live and breathe what they do, and do is what they live and what they, where they work or whatever. Daniel Gross and Tyler Cohen wrote a book recently called Talent. And one of the questions is that they ask people is like, what do you do on the weekends?
Mm.
And their point is your personality is revealed on the weekends. And so their point in that statement is like, if you're the type of person who was saying, you go to college and you're like, I want to be an Olympic track athlete. And then you said to your friends, I'm not going to go party tonight because I have track practice in the morning. I'm not going to go and get ice cream because I eat healthy because I want to be an Olympian, right? People be like, duh, right? Like, no shit. Like, I don't think you can eat ice cream, smoke weed, party, and then like go run, you know, the 100-meter dash and break the world record, right? But somehow the people who want to accomplish something that isn't physical, like athlete level stuff, we don't necessarily treat it that way. It's like very weird. And so I think that should be like okay, because you then are like, no, this is who I am. This is what I like doing. And like, just go do it,
mm-hmm.
right? And then now your work and your life become the same thing. And to some degree, I'm confused by people who like could go to work 9 to 5 and at 5 o'clock be like, okay, see you guys. I'll be back at 9 o'clock tomorrow. And then like literally they don't think about work until not, like I am so jealous. That sounds amazing. I can't do that.
When did you realize that your work and play were combined? Was that the moment you feel like you made it?
No, I don't think it's ever like done.
Right.
It's just, I think it works in reverse. It's like once you get comfortable betting on yourself, like that's the key thing is you have to be willing to bet on yourself. And once you know like, okay, cool, I'm comfortable doing this. Then you're just like, what am I interested in? And like, how do I get to do more of that a day?
Mm.
Right? Like, that's pretty much all it is. But the big like moment or crossover is like, are you willing to bet on yourself? Right? We could talk about, there's a lot of journalists right now at the mainstream media outlets. They don't want to work there anymore. They all put on the face, right? It's like they put on like the costume and they're like going to work. Oh, yes. So mainstream media is amazing. Look at me on television here. Let me write the article. Yes, it's awesome. Look at my business card. It's great. I talk to these people. Like, I see them tweeting on Twitter. And I'm like, I literally had a fucking conversation with you 2 days ago. And you're like, I can't wait to get out of this place.
Huh.
And the reason is because they see the independent media stuff. They see Substack. They see YouTube. They see podcasts. Like, that's their world,
yeah.
Right? They aspired to get to a point where they could create content in whatever form factor. They wanted to talk to audiences. They wanted to be on television. They wanted to meet people. Like, whatever the thing is that got them there. But they are scared shitless of walking out the door and having to bet on themselves. And the reason is because if they fail, they're like, damn, I gave that up. And it's like human nature, right? And yeah. So some people are like, I don't care. Like, I'll come right back, right? Like, who cares? Like, go. Other people are like, I have to plot out every single thing. You ever talk to like a 22-year-old? I'm like, okay, at 24, I will do this. At 26, I'll do this. At 28, I'll do this. And at 30, I'll do this. And I'm like, no, you're fucking not. Like, literally 0.1% of people do that stuff, right? And actually execute on it. So I think that there's this thing of like, there's never been a time in human history where people in content creation, which like in the most watered down version is what journalism is. Mm-hmm. They're creating content on the internet. It's all competition for eyeballs. Yep. Can bet on themselves and do it independently. Now, there's a lot of people who say like, oh, I don't want to be an entrepreneur. I don't want to do marketing. I don't want to do customer service. I don't want to do this, whatever. Cool. Like, that's fine. But if you know that about yourself, like, then that's one thing. But then there's another group of people who are like, ah, I love that idea. Do you think it could work? Right? Like, do people answer my emails because of @whatever.com or do they answer it because of the part before the @whatever.com? And like, you want to have a humbling fucking experience. Answer that question, right? And like, I can say that Polina has talked about it publicly before. When she was leaving Fortune, that was the question.
Mm.
Do people respond because it's Polina or do they respond because it's Fortune.com? We didn't know. We had no clue. And so we did everything we could to mitigate the risk or whatever, right? She worked her ass off to put herself in a position to be able to go bet on herself. And then one day she was like, let's do it. Mm. Like, she's like, I'm going to do it. And I remember being like, come again? Like, are you really going to do it, right? And she was like, yeah. And she left. And it was just so obvious. Like, literally within 48 hours, like, duh. Of course this was going to work, right? And so I think that it's like you essentially are like putting yourself up for judgment. And you have to be intellectually honest with yourself. Because if you're not intellectually honest with yourself, the market will be. And like, that just scares people.
What advice would you have for some journalist who doesn't know if they want to bet on themselves? Or what was that conversation like? Is there anything you could say to push them over the edge? Or it's more so like, if you have it inside of you, it'll work out.
Oh, I could convince all of them to quit. Like, that's the other thing is once you get like decent at the recruiting game and like understanding, okay, you don't like working here because A, B, and C thing, I can push on this and I can, and you like get very good at recruiting.
Do you view that as your role now as a recruiter for independence?
Not for independence, just like a lot of this time I spend is I'm trying to find interesting people to talk to, essentially interviewing them, right? Yeah. And then also in terms of making sure our companies have the best talent working there. So I go and I try to find interesting people, right? Interview them, whatever. So you almost like, you ever seen like, there's these viral videos that happen where like a cop with like literally a gun on his side all of a sudden is like boxing somebody on like the side of the road and they're like in a fist fight. And then like the comments are always like, yo, mad respect for the cop. Like he had the gun, but he never pulled it. Right. Like he stood there and he like went toe to toe, whatever. Like, I kind of feel like that's where, everybody I respect that's really, really good at acquiring talent, they don't actually try to convince people to join them. What they end up doing is they know the people who will be successful are the people who like end up banging down the door and they're like, yo, I got to do this. The way they do it is that they're super good selling the mission or the importance or like they're definitely are participating in the process. But what they don't do is they don't try to get somebody to do something that they're going to regret 6 months later because it just causes bigger problems. Yeah. And so it's like very fascinating how in some way the counterintuitive recruiting aspect works where you know, there's a company, there's a company here in Miami called Traba, is a good example. So, this guy, Mike, runs it. And, if you go to their like careers page, 90% of the people are like, these people are nuts. I'm not working there.
What type of company is it?
They have a marketplace that's like replacing like temp agencies. So, they help, if you right now drive on Uber, do food delivery, TaskRabbit, whatever, this is another option. So kind of gig economy style work. But what they do is they, maybe there's temp work needed at a warehouse for a day or two. Maybe it's to set up for a concert. Maybe it's like unarmed security at a conference or with like the yellow shirts or whatever. So it's, all these like temp worker type opportunities, but you can get paid $15, $16, $17, $18, $19, $20 an hour. Right. So it's like similar type of engagement with a platform where you're getting hired to do work that you're not actually an employee, but it could be something you enjoy more or higher pay or whatever. 6 days a week they work. Not five, 6 days a week in the office. 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 90% of people don't want to do that shit. They're like, yo, fuck that. I'm too successful. I'm this, I'm that. I want to do this, whatever. They don't judge any of those people, right? And I've talked to them a lot about it a lot. There's people who are like, I can't do it. I have a kid. He says, fine. That you should go spend time with your kid, right? Like that's actually the thing that you should go do. This isn't for you. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you're bad. Doesn't mean we're bad. It just means like not a match. But then there's somebody who's like, I got a kid. but I fucking love this, right? Like, that's what I'm looking for. And so in some ways, it's like the Navy SEALs pitch where, what do they say? They say, we have a high attrition rate. You should not do this. It's hard. Like, whatever. And, like, there's some crazies that show up, and they're like, I can do that shit. Like, yeah. I love that, right? Yeah. And so the pitch, sometimes by saying who it isn't for, actually attracts the right people.
Yeah.
And so, like, you just learn these, like, tricks over time, and and I'm, like, blown away. When I have to, like, figure some of this stuff out, I'm like, wow, there is, like, levels to this game.
Well, you were saying that in the workshop you did with David Perel. You said, don't create content. Like, it's hard. You shouldn't do it. Like, this is a mistake. And then that's selecting for the type of people who are actually going to look at that challenge and be like, I could do that.
It's because all the advice that people get, everyone gets like pushed to do things in today's society, right? And it's like a weird, I don't know, I feel like a fucking grandpa, like being like, today's society, whatever. Everyone is pushed to do things. It's like, you can do anything. You can do anything. Yeah. Like, technically, you can do anything, but you shouldn't try everything, right? Yeah. And that's okay. Like, that is perfectly fine. But I think that people sometimes do a disservice to folks by being like, it's all rosy. Mm. Like, actually, if you tell them all the shit that sucks and they still want to do it, way more likely. And you know, I'll give my brother shit only because I've said this before. He was working at a bank in July of 2020, and he called me up, and he goes, I want to talk to you about something. Can I come see you? Sure, whatever. Like, you know, what dumb thing are we going to talk about, right? And he came, and it was funny because he was, like, very serious, right? And he was like, I want to do essentially content on the internet, but didn't say it that way. And I was like, don't, you're not going to do it. And he was like, no, I'm serious. Like, I created a Substack. And I was like, what? And he had a brand already in this. And like, and I was like, what are you going to do? Like, okay, great. Congratulations. You spent like 2 hours, right? Like, what are you going to do? And I wasn't convinced until like maybe 4 or 6 weeks into it. Mm. Every single morning before he went to work at that bank, he got up at like 4:30 in the morning and he wrote the fucking email and he sent it. And then he went to work. Mm. And then while he was at work, he would like go to the bathroom and like tweet and then like come back, work, go like, and he was doing all this stuff. And I was like, this psycho is really about to do this. Like he is committed to doing it. And so that's when I was like, all right, what do you want to do? And literally we came up with a couple of milestones. We said, if you hit these 3 milestones, like you should quit. Yeah. And he was like, really? Like it was kind of this moment of like, did my brother just tell me I should quit my job? And I was like, yeah, I think like that's real. Like this would be like product market fit essentially. And to his credit, the day that he hit the milestones, he quit. And, you know, I don't know if he's ever said this, somebody he worked with, who will go nameless was like, remember, it's a bank, right? He's like, you're going to go be a writer on the internet. And they were so confused, but like to his credit, he was willing to bet on himself. He was willing to have the confidence to be like, yo, I want to do this. Like, this is what I enjoy doing. Let me go do it. And so just the reason I tell that story is like, I probably told 50 to 100 people, like without exaggeration, 50 to 100 people I talked to over the years where they were like, I would like to do some of this stuff. Mm. And I was like, okay, write every day, do this, whatever. Zero of them did it. The very first person I ever saw do it was my brother. And I was like, damn, like I was shocked, but I was excited. And like, now look at them.
You just started that story by saying, I'm going to give my brother some shit. And you just continue to hype him up for the next.
Well, it's because I probably told some stuff. He's like, dude, come on, don't tell those stories.
But what were the milestones?
By the way, that's also a way to give your brother shit, is to not say anything bad. Because now he's like, oh, damn, like I can't come at him next time because he was nice to me.
So what were some of those milestones and what exactly was the advice?
I don't know how comfortable he was with like the exact milestones. One of them was like an ad revenue milestone. And then another one was, I forget the actual number, but it was how many people were subscribed to the email. Right. And so it was just like, can you go from zero? He had no Twitter account. He had no email. Like, he basically wasn't on the internet. Right. Like in the sense we think about from like a content standpoint. Mm-hmm. He I think maybe had like a private Instagram or something. Right. And like I would put him in the category of like he was like the average mid-20s person on the internet who's like, I consume all this, but I don't really create anything. Yep. And he went very quickly to like oh, now he has Twitter followers. Oh, now he's got his people subscribed to the email. Oh, we can get advertisers that want to actually like sell against this content. And so then it was just like, all right, you hit the milestones, but like, it's on you.
Right.
Like, I didn't help him, right? In terms of we didn't sell any ads for him. We didn't do any of that shit. Like, it was definitely on him. Because it also is very clear that, like, I've had people come to me and be like, oh, but, like, you could, like, help me grow my email list. You could sell the ads. You could do all, like, yes, we could do all that shit. But, like, why would we do it for you, right? Like, we should do it for ourselves, which is greedy as fuck and, like, super selfish. But it's actually, if I did it for you, it'd be a disservice because at some point you're gonna grow big enough where you're gonna be like, I wanna leave and I wanna go do it on my own. And if you don't know how to do that shit, like, you are screwed. And what you've seen is a lot of people who have gotten really big at some of these organizations stuff, they do leave. Very few of them have been successful or as successful when they've left because they don't realize what's wrapped around them. And so it's kind of this like, look, just like die early if you're gonna die, right? like just get it over with. And if you kind of pass that attrition, you know, or kind of pass that difficulty stage, then you're good to go.
I want to go back to thinking, you mentioned before about how some people have their careers lined up of like 24, I'm going to do this, 27, I'm going to do this, 30. And I think that goes and hits at the way education is in America today, at least, where it's like, all right, at 18, you're going to do this and then you're going to go to college and then you're going to get a job. And it's like everything is very much given to us and the path is very much given to us. What, if anything, can we do to reform that system or to change the way people view the world of like step by step by step?
Don't send your kids to school.
Yeah.
Literally, the school is indoctrinating them into a world that doesn't fucking exist anymore. Mm. Right? Now, and people are like, oh, you don't have any kids. Like, no, I fucking got a kid now. Like, I'm definitely paying attention, right? What I always go back to is like, what was the way the school is set up today, what was the purpose? It was for the Industrial Revolution. Yeah. By the way, it was the perfect system for what society, whatever that's supposed to mean at this point, needed, right? Yeah. Is we basically needed people who were super skilled, who could carry out tasks, who could essentially fit within a system. Like, what sane person tells an eight-year-old, shut up and sit down and sit there for 3 hours? Like, the eight-year-old doesn't want to do that. Right? Like, let them go fucking live their life. Now, the balance or the counterpoint to that is like, yo, we still need to teach 2 + 2 = 4, right? We still need them to be able to read and write. We still need them to be able to do certain things. So, like, there has to be education. It's not just like, good luck, right? Like, hope you learn shit. But I think the way they can do it is very different. And so, again, what it does is like, just like we talked earlier about like outsourcing security to the military and all this stuff, like school is really just outsourcing education,
yeah.
Right? Like you are saying the state is better at educating my child than I will be. Now, there are a lot of people, I don't know what the percentage, but a very lot of people who are like, I don't have the time. I have to go to work or my kid's not going to eat. I have to go do this or whatever. And it gets even worse if it's a single parent or if it's both parents in a household are working a 9-to-5 job where they don't have the luxury of leaving or coming when they want or whatever. So like, it's important to call out that like it is a position of benefit and privilege, like whatever the language you want to use is, to be able to even consider not sending your kid to the local school or whatever. Now, there are variations of this. So I recently had this guy, Dave McIntosh, on, who is the president of the Club for Growth. And one of their big topics or issues that they push is this idea of school choice. So a parent says, hey, I am going to send my kid to a school. I'm not going to be participating in it. I'm not going to do homeschool or any of this stuff. They're going to go to school. But I want to choose which school they go to. So I look at it as like, if you just get zoned in to a district and like they go to the school, okay, like you have basically no say, no anything. Like you're as least kind of participatory as possible, right? Like kid just goes to school, maybe go to teacher parent conference or whatever. He asks kid what he did at school that day and like you're done. School choice is like the next step where you're like, okay, like I want to make like the macro decision. Are you going to go to this school or this school, right? Or is this school good? Is this school bad? Then you get into things like supplemental stuff. So there's the synthesis and a bunch of these companies and programs that have popped up where it's like, no, the kid's going to go to school, but then we're going to supplement the education with maybe it's critical thinking or problem solving, or it's literally math and science or whatever. And then you get to like the homeschool, the Montessori school, like there's all these variations. I see over and over and over again, talking to my friends who have young kids, the people who seem to be the most engaged are the people whose kids seem to be like the furthest along. And it's weird because you're like, is that 6-year-old smart or not? Like, 6, right? But like, it's a trend that I noticed, which is like very interesting. So I had a child psychologist. I tracked her down, right? I was like, I need to talk to someone. I'm like, how do you raise a smart kid? She's like, well, I don't know if I could like help with that, but like we can talk about like raising a kid. And so one of the things that she said is like, one of the most powerful things you can do for a kid is literally just talk to them. Mm. And I was like, whoa.
No one ever told me that.
But how many parents can't?
Yeah.
How many parents, like, you know, it's like the quintessential example of like how many single moms that work two jobs are like, I am literally not next to my kid for 18 hours a day. Mm. It's just, I don't care how much you love your kid or want to talk to your kid or whatever. Like, you just can't talk to them or you're not there. So there's like, that is like a very unfortunate situation where the kid and the mother or father or whatever, just it doesn't work. On the other side, I go to dinner with people all the time. And like I just say it publicly. I don't give a fuck. The number one thing that just, you will immediately get fired as a friend is like, I'll go to dinner and somebody will be like, oh man, yes, finally dinner. Like, I got out of my house, got away from my wife. I'm like, dude, shut the fuck up, right? Like, just shut up. And the reason is just like, I don't even think that they actually mean it. It's just like, you are so mentally soft that you can't sit here and be like, yo, I want to come to dinner to like hang out with the people here, or say like, not actually, like I enjoy hanging out with my wife or my husband or my kids or like whatever. It's like, they feel like that's the thing they're supposed to say.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know. It's annoying. So like in some way being engaged and like caring is like a great signal for like the people around you. Are they going to end up being productive, accomplished, whatever measurement you want?
On the topic of your child, I know you recently had a change of perspective on sharing, and it's something that I really admire because people look at the way they do things and then they don't stop and question it and based on new information. Some of you do a lot. Yeah. And what happened in that scenario, if you'd like to share it?
So I think on just a macro scale, pretty much everything I ever did was on the internet for like years. People knew I ate Domino's every Saturday. They knew this. They knew everything, right?
Yeah.
And it was like fun. It was like cool. It was like literally I could text my friends or I could just put on the internet and like whatever. Who cares? And when it was like Planet and I, like whatever, you know, people would like say weird shit or whatever. But like, who cares? I think two things happened. One, like you just kind of get to a point in your life where you're just like, yo, this is like weird now, right? Yeah. Like people know all this information and all this stuff. And like, it just becomes something where you're like, do you want to be publicly known? And like the whole, like Tim Ferriss wrote a whole blog of like don't become famous, mm-hmm. right? Like all this type of stuff. And so like, this is not a new problem. This is not some new insight. This is like literally an entire new generation of people who came onto the internet and built big audiences the last 5 to 10 years. Like they're just learning the same shit, right? Mm-hmm. So I think like that's just like at some point you're like, why? Like I don't need to do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. And the second thing was with our daughter, we were super excited. Like we still, you know, it was like amazing. It was like awesome. We went to a coffee shop and somebody walked up and was like, is that? And used her name. And I was like, oh, fuck no.
That
like,
freaked you out, understandably.
Because it wasn't by any means in a malicious or nefarious way. Like it was more of like a, hey, I enjoy all the content. Thank you so much. Like all the stuff. Like I know so much because I care so much.
Yeah.
Which was like super endearing and like amazing. But I was just like, yo, this is, it's unfair to the kid. It's unfair to other people. Like I have two brothers that nobody knows their names, right? Like they're not on the internet. They're not doing shit. Like, you know, one of them, I've said it before, is a doctor.
Right.
It'd be real weird if like he was out here being like, yo, hot take on, you know, the economy or politics or, you know, Bitcoin or something. Like a patient's like, bro, what did you say? Right. So like, it's just like at some point it's like, yeah, what is the goal? What are you trying to accomplish? And like, I think there's a lot of people who are realizing there are benefits to content, internet, all stuff. But also there's like downsides.
Definitely.
Just like find your own place. Like, and I don't think it's fair to judge anyone who posts everything. I don't think it's fair to judge people who are like, I'm not on the internet. Like, again, I have this saying with Plano, like whenever we see somebody doing something that like from the outside looks weird, I always just ask myself, like, you think they're happy? Mm-hmm. If they're happy, that's fucking amazing, right? And like, who cares what they're doing, right? Like, they're happy. if they're not happy, they're like, damn, like that's like really unfortunate. Like I hope that they get, you know, can be happier doing it. And like, I think that's a great way to just kind of filter, you know, what do you want to do?
Yeah, I like that. I'd like to close out with a few questions here. What is the best possible future invention or discovery for humankind?
If I knew that, I'd be fucking rich.
Well, then you got to execute on it.
Yeah, what is the best invention for humankind in the future? It's probably something that we don't even like understand right now, frankly. But like things that are within like the realm of imagination, maybe. It seems like we should probably go to space, like for, like Mars, yes, but like even further, like there's shit out there, right? Like, are there aliens? Probably. So like that whole like just like how do we solve science problems to get human questions answered seems like super interesting. So if you think of that as like the furthest thing away from our human bodies, like let's go try to solve that. Then like the other extreme is like, we don't even fucking know that much about our own bodies. Right. So like all the like, biology, all of the, brain computer interfaces, like just like everything to do with like your body and optimizing, understanding how do we solve, you know, can we solve death? Right. Like, I don't know, that sounds fucking nuts, but like maybe. Right? Is aging a disease? Like that's a pretty interesting idea. Like how do we affect that? So I think it's like one extreme is like as far away from the body as possible. The other extreme is like literally who we are as individuals and like better understanding that. And then I actually think one of the things we've learned over time in history is technology constantly replaces what humans do and it frees humans up to do new things. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that actually the rate at which we are doing that right now is very slow compared to other points in history. And so it doesn't even matter what we actually do as much as like, could we just speed up the rate? Mm. And it's like rate of innovation, rate of automation, rate of productivity. Like there's a bunch of different ways you can measure it. But if we could accelerate that, if you looked across humanity, that would probably have one of the biggest impacts. And within that would be all these like sub things like inventions, you know, more efficiencies, like all these other things. But just like the rate of progress, how do you like bend that upwards? Which like sounds fucking amazing. I don't know how to do it.
Right? Most people would say that we are going at an exponentially faster rate, but
fuck no.
you don't think so?
If you go out in the street right now, people are driving gas cars.
Yeah.
They're doing the same shit in the early 1900s.
But there's like, we're more 120 people years on, later. There are more people on electric than ever before.
Sure.
So that's growth, no?
It is the right path. Like we will get there. It's just taking way longer than I think most people thought, right? Like if you think SpaceX is what, 22 years old or 20 years old, something like that. I think Tesla is like 14, 15 years old, right? Like it's been a decade and a half. People don't fucking, what's going on? I went outside, like 90% of the cars are not electric. What the fuck's happening, right? So like, again, it takes a long time, yeah. Right? And all that. The other thing is things that we thought would have already happened now haven't happened. So it goes back to the Bill Gates quote, we, you know, overestimate in 2 years, underestimate in 10 years. So like, that's interesting. And then I think also we have like an ambition crisis where if you go talk, like I spend a lot of time talking to people who want to start companies, right? And some of the time it is, I just want to learn. Sometimes it's, we're looking at it from an investment standpoint. Sometimes people pitching us like, hey, let's start a company together or whatever. It is depressing as to the North Star that so many people pick. They're like, okay, so I'm on like level one. I want to build something for level two. Hmm. And I think it's refreshing when you see somebody like, I'm on level one. I'm going to build something for level 1,000. Hmm. And you're like, that sounds insane. Right. And so I'll give you one example that I think some people in tech know, but people outside might not. So Varda is a company, Delian and his co-founder started a business. They essentially want to send manufacturing equipment up into space already. Like that's crazy. Then they want to manufacture things in space and then they want to bring it back down onto Earth. Right. And you're like, why would you do that? And there's all these advantages doing it. It's zero gravity. It's cost. It's like whatever. Right. How many people are working on a company that is the equivalent ambition level of like, we should do space manufacturing, right? Just not that many. And so like when you see that, like one, I know Delian, right? And would bet on him all day long. But then you see the ambition, you're like, dude, that's something I want to invest in. Like, yes, I want to be an investor in that business. There's just not that many of those. And I don't know if it's necessarily like oh, there used to be tons of them and now there's like not as many. Like that's probably an arrogant view for us today to have. But I do think that like you can level up the ambition of a group by just one person. Like Elon Musk has probably outsourced or like through like osmosis, like sent ambition through a lot of people. Cause like, well, if this dude could literally land rockets that he just used, I probably shouldn't be working on like how to click the ad, right? like there's something in between landing reasonable rockets and like, hey, let's optimize this button. I've done it. I get it, right? Like whatever.
You've been there.
Yeah, like I changed the colors of the button. are they square or round on the edges? Like I get it. Usually round. And so it's like click the button or like land the rocket. Those are the extremes. I just think that like, can you pull people? Okay, I don't want to click the button, but like, what's the next thing? Okay, I'm doing the next thing. What's the next thing after that? And if you pull them closer and closer to like the high ambition stuff, it's just better for humanity in general.
I think that's a beautiful place to come to a close. Anthony, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm really grateful for you. You're someone thinking and living in the future and somebody who is able to express themselves and where they're going so clearly. So I want to thank you for that and appreciate everything you've given to this podcast.
Yeah, look, I enjoyed it. I don't know if I'm living in the future. I'm probably behind, but doing my best. Thanks.
Appreciate you.